Well then, welcome to the Flyover Startups Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Poehler. Each week we talk to founders who are building their businesses outside of Silicon Valley in the so-called flyover states. This episode is our second part episode with Eric Lam of Mithra 62. We talk about commercial expression engine development versus WordPress development. And we also talk about his latest project with Christopher Imrie. Stay tuned. How long did it take you in between that time at you realized, okay, I have this product I can potentially sell, to the time that actually, you know, you got around to actually putting it up? Was there kind of any procrastination during that time, or any doubt of, you know, whether there was like a market, or, you know, whether anyone would buy it, or, you know, you get an email of saying, oh, this is easy, I could do this in a day.
Yeah, you know, honestly, at that point, because before Expression Engine, I'd done a lot of stuff with WordPress. Mm-hmm. I've released some fairly popular WordPress plugins,
okay,
and felt really burned out, like just from the open source world, of just felt very taken advantage of, mm-hmm, and just a little abused. The mentality you end up getting with, especially with WordPress, in fact, I shouldn't have even said open source, but with WordPress specifically, you just deal with a whole lot of entitlement.
Yeah.
And, you know, when
for free plugins, released, yeah,
that was my main point, was like, I'm giving this thing out to you for free. I'm putting on there. In fact, the biggest thing, or the one that made me just wash my hands of WordPress entirely, was I got a really, really sad, sappy email from a guy. Hmm. One of my WordPress plugins was a click tracker, like an ad tracker. But basically, if you install it in WordPress, in fact, I think it still works with WordPress, but if you install it, every single link, you don't have to do anything but install the plugin, it will add click tracking to it.
Awesome.
So you can track every single link on your site, and it tracks where it came from and who did it, and it's very, very in-depth.
Yeah.
But in the way that it does it, it never felt done to me. It never felt like it was – like it felt like there would still be bugs coming, and I wasn't really prepared to make it a 1.0. So the whole thing I released as a beta. I think the highest it ever got was a 0.7,
okay,
0.7, which to me as a programmer screams don't use in production.
Yeah.
Well, I ended up getting this email from this guy, and he basically told me, it was like he ended up commissioning some guy to build him on a site, and he built out this site where he has his clients or other affiliates who pay him money based off of the clicks that they get.
No.
And the reporting was showing skewed results, and he wasn't sure what to do, and he was in a real, real spot. And I was just like, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Yeah.
I mean, at first I was a little heartbroken, just like, holy crap, this is not good. I mean, here's this random guy asking me for help, but then I started thinking about it. And it was just one of those, like, you did it to yourself, buddy. Like,
yeah.
I mean, not for nothing, not, you know. But I released it. I've claimed for the past year that I'm no longer going to be supporting it. It's not production. You know,
yeah. He kind of got taken advantage of, but the developer who created, you know, who implemented the site for him and used your plugin just didn't do their due diligence. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's really unfortunate because
wow.
Yeah, I mean, but that got to me, and his responses were not friendly at all. Like, I mean,
like
oh, totally. I released this crap onto the internet, and I'm responsible, and I'm just like, delete. Like, I mean, I couldn't even bring myself to respond to it. It was just like, that is just so belligerent. But the more it sat with me, the more irritated I got, and it was just one of many situations.
So this was a pattern that, you know, just kept coming.
Yeah, and when it came to the expression and stuff, I love releasing code. I love being part of a community,
yeah,
and talking about it. And expression is an extremely inviting community.
Yeah.
I mean, just extremely warm and friendly. And there's just so much there that I don't know. It was a little appealing. And the more I would be exposed to it, the more I would kind of feel comfortable with it. And at the end of the day, the argument I had within myself for releasing it was they've got to pay for it.
Right.
At the end of the day, like, the big thing that always irritated me was the entitlement. And if they pay for it, then at the very least, I'll feel, you know, like maybe I should.
It's funny how that works. You know, when you offer something for free, you do get this response of, well, I want this, this, and this, and I deserve to have
right.
this, this, and this. And then when someone pays for something, the responses are so much different.
exactly. You know,
it's a really strange, like, psychology, I guess. And the thing I've noticed with open source, I almost made PDF Press open source, but at the end of the day, I was like, well, I'm going to support it, whether it's open source or a commercial product. I'd rather know that people are find some value that they'll pay $15 or whatever the price I originally launched.
Right.
You know, I want to know that it's valuable. And the one metric I know, like, will determine value is price, is charging for it. You know, they just, absolutely, they just tend to value it more. And, you know, you actually want to help them, you know, slightly more.
To me, the way that I see it is it kind of takes the entitlement off the table entirely. Because right away, I mean, barrier to entry,
yeah,
they've got to give up something, you know. Right. So if they had to give up something to get it, what, at least the logic in my mind works like that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping.
Yeah. Have you adjusted your price at any time since you've released a module? Have you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, it's one of those things I realized a little late in the game, but you've got to kind of stay on top of it.
Yeah.
And you always end up hearing arguments from people of like, well, you've got to price it to that sweet spot of, like, you know, avoiding somebody else building it themselves. Right. So, I mean, if an add-on is like $50 and it would take somebody 12 hours to do it, that's a decent deal, is the argument that most people tend to make with it. And I kept putting that off of it. It just, I don't know. It didn't really feel right. But, after getting so many support requests and seeing so many feature requests and realizing just the absolute, like, we're never done.
Right.
We're never done.
Right.
How wonderful would that be to just be done with backup to PDF Press? We're like, it just works. But, you know, I mean, new add-ons come out and interoperability and expression engine changes. And, I mean, we're never done. And so I've consistently raised the prices of my add-ons to reflect that.
I feel like you in a way owe it to your customers to make sure that, you know, you can keep the business going and keep supporting the product. And in a lot of cases, that does mean increasing the price, especially if you add features, just because, you know, revenue has to come in, has to keep coming in, has to keep growing. And the more value, you keep adding value every single week, you know, so at some point, it's time to ask for a little bit more for that value. So that makes a lot of sense.
That's the thing too, is we offer free unlimited upgrades.
Yeah.
I mean, just through the process of selling through Devoted.
Yeah.
You know? So that alone, it's like, I mean, the work has to continually keep going in. Cause if I'm I don't actively support old customers. Mm-hmm. Unless there's like a bug or, you know, it broke their stuff. So, I mean, if you bought this thing for me for like a year ago and then you upgrade to tomorrow, chances are I'm not going to support you. But if you upgrade Expression Engine, I can guarantee you that upgrading to my stuff will work with it. Well, you know, with the latest versions, and it'll always kind of be up to date. You shouldn't really have to worry about it breaking or anything.
Right.
And as you say, I mean, all that takes work. I was explaining to a customer a couple of days ago, but none of this is automatic. Mm. Like, there's not automatically interoperability between custom system messages and our add-ons. Mm. Like, we need to build in certain strategies and take certain things into account to make sure it works with Matrix and this works with Playa. And, I mean, all this stuff, it's constantly up to date. And when Playa updates, or is it Playa or Playa?
I always pronounce it Playa, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've been corrected on that many times. It's Playa. It is. For some reason, it's the Southern California upbringing. I see Playa and I think Playa because Playa del Rey and you know.
Well, when you're recommending, you know, a module called Playa to a client, that's what's that?
I've never
stays on top. You know,
and in fact, we should probably talk about that because I've never recommended an add-on to anybody. I mean, in terms of a client. No, I've never gone to a client and been like, for $50, you can go ahead and buy this thing. I just buy it. I just do it. Like, do they want me to solve a problem? I'm not going to. Like, I tend to look at it as, like, clients aren't equipped to answer these questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, like, me putting it to the client, they're the least responsible person for answering how I should build out their site or what tools I should use.
Oh.
It'd be like going to your mechanic and telling him which screwdriver to use. You know, like, we would never think to do that.
No, no. That's a good point. Although I'm sure there are some people who would make that presumption.
Oh, absolutely. But it doesn't mean that they're right, you know.
You're not using a Craftsman screwdriver? I'm going to a different shop. Well,
but no, I've never recommended anything to anybody. I mean, a client.
Sometimes with agencies, because they kind of look to me sometimes as the expression engine, you know, expert. So they want to know how they should talk to their client, I guess. I guess that's a good point, because I kind of recommended some modules the other day and it kind of came back on me a little bit, and that they wanted me to do extra work to scope out the estimate that they would then take to their client to potentially get the project. And I was like, well, and you know, I get the, like, just initial, like, super massive ballpark, you know, you guys didn't give me a scope, so here's the number you're getting. And then they came back and like, oh, that's too much because it won't fit in our maintenance plan. I'm like, wait a minute, the retainer is just the retainer. Like, you're trying to get more work.
Right.
It was just, wow. I was just like, guys, figure it out. And then if you have a specific use case, I'll scope for that. But I'm not doing 8 hours of scoping work for free.
Not unless they want to pay you for it. Right. Yo, pay me.
Yeah. What are some of the major challenges of supporting, you know, marketing and selling and supporting these products? I guess the common challenge that I hear from people who are selling products, especially tech products, is the support. Is that a big cost, I guess, in the business?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, the support costs, at the very least with an expression engine, I can't speak to anything else, obviously, but with an expression engine, it pretty much nullifies any profits, hands down.
Is that because you have multiple products, or, you know, what do you think the cause of that, I guess, increased support, you know, where does that come from?
Well, some of it is user error. In fact, I'm going to be honest and say most of it is user error. Mm-hmm. It seems to be incredibly difficult to get people to read the documentation or to write proper documentation. I don't want to put it all off on the user, but sometimes I found that I didn't write something clearly enough within the docs, or something's just not phrased properly. But most of the time, it's just the complexity of the issue.
Yeah.
Building out an add-on that works universally across every single platform and every single configuration is really, really, really tough job. Hmm. So, and plus the nature of the add-ons too, like with Backup Pro, for example, my number one issue that I always end up get is memory issues, where PHP is set for, you know, 32 megs of memory, and they're trying to back up, you know, a gig size video. Or timeout issues, where they just have a million files and their server is set to 30 seconds. But things like that, where it's like most people at our level as developers would be like, oh, cool, PHP. I know PHP. I've got to go in and do it. But I don't think that it would be out of line to say that there's a decent percentage of expression engine developers, and maybe even developers elsewhere, who don't really understand the tools that they're using. So to them, they're going in and they're building out a website and it works out fine and it looks great and it does what it's supposed to do. And then, you know, rightly, they think, oh, let me get a backup program going. But they just don't know.
Yeah.
So a lot of my support comes down to that, where, in fact, literally, I have a link that I just throw into a lot of forum posts now. I'm just like, here's your answer here. Read that. Let me know if it doesn't work. We'll talk.
Yeah. What have you done anything to basically try to reduce the support time other than the link?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. The coding techniques that you end up developing to kind of bypass and stymie a lot of these issues. Cause, especially in fact, I don't want to sound like I'm singling out Expression Engine, but Expression Engine changes their core a lot.
Yeah. Especially recently. It's been really annoying.
Yeah. So as a developer, I mean, every single release I have to add in stuff. And if I want to keep ensuring that my add-ons work for older users who don't want to upgrade Expression Engine or can't, I mean, now I have to add in all this extra boilerplate code and do version checking within it and making sure their system and variables is at least this. And if it is, you know, so you have to add in a whole bunch of conditionals to handle specific situations, and it quickly grows very, very complicated. So that's generally how I've handled it, though, is I see somebody with an issue, or I see a server configuration where I know the way I'm doing it is going to work. Well, now I got to throw a conditional and check and, you know, handle it accordingly. But a lot of times, especially with stuff like this, new issues, like, I mean, I've been, Backup Pro's been out at the 1.0 branch for over 2 years now, and I'm still getting in new issues randomly. Wow. So, and also not to mention too, I mean, obviously you develop anything, you change any code, you're going to introduce bugs.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. You know, every new release anyways. In fact, I think I mentioned this to Ben once, but I've gotten in the habit every time I do a big major release, like a 1.2, 1.8, whatever, I make sure my calendar is clear, because I know just from going, you know, all of the changes to require me to go up a point release, there's going to be some people are going to have issues and I need to be available for that.
Yeah.
But
so you plan that
it would be an under
part of your work and as part of your just deployment strategy and your release strategy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. In fact, I never thought I'd have one, but yeah, I've actually developed a release strategy. I don't do it willy nilly anymore.
What goes into the release strategy? Are you doing like a series of emails beforehand of, you know, sort of prepping for the new release? You know, can you take us through?
I rarely have a moment where I know next month I'm going to be able to start working on it. Usually when I find myself like right now, I have a few days off in a row. I'll go through the bugs or the forms for whatever add-on I decided I'm going to work on. And I try and hit each one where I'm like, oh, you know, if I tell them, I'll put it off till the next release. I tend to do that a lot instead of jumping on immediately. It's like, is this a crippling bug that just affects you? Or is it, you know, but I generally try and hit up every single bug and just go through and methodically every one I go through, make sure I squash it, close out the post. It's kind of become my bug tracker of sorts. Hmm. And then just go through with any feature requests. And I mean, every single one is very, very deliberate, but I start out with bugs first, mm-hmm. make sure I kill out any bugs that are still waiting before I attack any new features. Yeah. I find it to be very, very irresponsible to do it any other way.
Right.
Personally. So, I always try and have a zero bug list and then I'll move on to features. And then as soon as everything works out good, what I generally do is I'll deploy it out to my network first. And just let it kind of run on, you know, myth362.com and my blog. I'll just let it kind of sit there and run a little bit. And if I don't see any issues, then I'll send it out to a group of testers that I have. Right now, I've got about a decent 30 different customers who will try out random add-ons that I have.
Okay.
And I'll just send out an email to each one, like, hey, here's this thing. No problem. Don't feel like, you know, pressured. But if you can, kick the tires. Let me know if anything breaks. And then I wait. I like to give that at least a week, sometimes two, because mm-hmm. who knows? I mean, I'm throwing this out to these people, and I have no idea. But after that, I generally take no news is good news,
mm-hmm.
and if I don't hear anything back, then I publish up on Devotee.
Okay.
But even that, I'm not done, because as soon as I do that, then I need to be available and watch out for the bug trackers and, you know, just kind of see what happens. So it's definitely a process.
So how do you go through support usually? Do you just track bugs on the Devotee forums? Do you have a official like bug tracking database that you maintain?
I use just the Devotee forums for now. Well, actually, okay. Not even just for now. I don't really have any intention of stopping. Mostly out of convenience and deference to the customer. I mean, obviously, that is probably hands down the worst bug tracker you could possibly use. A forum, not Devotee, but just a forum in general.
Sure.
But because that's where the customers are, and I cannot take for granted that they're going to be tech savvy enough to go anywhere else. And the last thing I want is to have bugs over here and then over there and somewhere else. And I've got to, you know, so I really try and just focus on just the Devotee forum. I don't even tell people to go anywhere else. So if somebody was to like post a bug on Stack Overflow, no clue. Yeah. I'm not going to get it. I'm not looking for it. Like I might run into it eventually 6 months later, but
right.
Devotee forums. And,
okay.
It's a lot of pain for me, but it seems to be good for the customers. So
is that your main sales channel too? Is Devotee?
Actually I sell on Devotee and cartdrop.com.
Oh, okay. So right off of Carthrob.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Ever since I released CT Admin, Carthrob and I have had a very wonderful and symbiotic relationship.
Oh, good.
A lot of respect from both sides, I think.
Okay. So most of your, I guess most of your sales would come from those two channels, and are, do you have any significant sales like on your own through your own site or?
No. No, yeah. In fact, a big part of what I liked about Expression Engine initially was Devotee existed.
Yeah.
But now that I've been doing it for such a long time, I am in the process of getting everything. Although, to be fair, I've been in the process for over a year. But yeah. I am in the process of trying to get everything set up so I can sell on my own site as well and open that up as a channel. But yeah. It's shocking how much work goes into it.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. Services like Gumroad have made collecting and distributing digital files and collecting credit card payments very, very easy. I think the biggest challenge is just crafting copy that will actually convert and will enable users to buy the product over your competitors. So that's been a challenge I face personally, I guess, with PDF Press. Maybe because it is such a small module and it does have a few competitors that I have to deal with too.
Yeah. Well, looking through mine, I only really have, I mean, CT Admin has obviously got competitors through, the same ones as any e-commerce thing, Store, Brilliant Retail.
Yeah.
But even that, like, I don't really feel like I compete with them because, I mean, you've got to have Carthrob anyways. Like, I'm right. Useless without Carthrob. But, Backer Pro, I definitely have a competitor in Safe Harbor.
Yeah.
And those guys, a lot of respect for what Tom and his team are doing. But they definitely set the tone. I've got to give them props on that.
Sure. Expression Engine being a small community, and do you know Tom personally or speak with him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, I would even go so far as to say that Tom and I are friends.
Yeah. How... what's it like, I guess, just maintain a, I guess, kind of a business kind of competition, but then also running into each other at conferences and stuff? Has that been an awkward experience or?
Not at all. In fact, the first time I met Tom, such a classy guy, I met him at the EECI in Brooklyn. Very first EECI, I think it only been out for maybe 5-6 months. And I saw him, I knew him from his pictures, and I was obviously a little intimidated, just like, you know, that's Tom, the guy who does Safe Harbor, like, I don't know. And as soon as he saw me, big fucking grin on his face. He's like, oh, the competition. And as soon as that, I was just like, you're awesome, man. Right on.
Yeah. But Tom's a cool guy.
Personally, we don't talk about the backup stuff. A bit of a Chinese sure. wall. We'll talk about other add-ons and other things we're working on. But, to his credit, I mean, like, I've never really had a thing where I was just like, oh, I got to talk to Tom about my add-on that we compete against.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's never brought it up. I've never brought it up. It just doesn't seem – I mean, it's just never been a need to talk about that. But okay. I've known Tom for – well, ever since Brooklyn, and a wonderful guy. And he and I talk on Skype from time to time, and definitely a fan.
Yeah. So what are the long-term goals for you and – I think you alluded to mentioning that you had some bigger software ideas that you were going to pursue. Any hints as to what those might be? Or
Yeah. In fact, Christopher Imrie and I, he was my partner on doing the Expression Engine Debug Toolbar and Entry Analytics for Expression Engine. He and I have decided to team up again and do a project management system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're breaking out of the Expression Engine ecosystem and trying something a little bit different. But this new project management system, it's called MojiTrack. And MojiTrack has been in development by me personally for over 3 years. I've been working on it and using it. It is my day-to-day for years. I've been using it as my project management for all my client work. And in fact, that's how it started was... when I decided to get back into freelancing this last time, three or four years ago, I obviously needed a tool and I needed to learn, to kind of modernize my skills a little bit. I'd been with an agency for a while and I've been doing my own thing. And here I was kind of thrown back out into the wild And I don't know, I just felt like I needed to kind of get into these web frameworks that everyone kept talking about. And so I made my decision on a Xen framework. So I decided to dive into Xen framework by building out a project management system. And the goal was never to release it. It was just a tool for me to learn and a tool for me to be able to manage the clients that I was slowly, slowly gaining at that time. But, you know, it's important to stay on top of your tasks. And, it was a very important tool to have. So I started building it out, and more features, ideas kept coming in, and more things would be useful to me. And then my girlfriend actually decided that she was going to kind of start helping us out and offering up ideas and suggestions. And we kind of worked on it collaboratively for a couple of months. And then, you know, obviously we break up as happens. And, I mean, just one thing after another, though, and it was a constant iterative thing. And then I had a client. In fact, my main client, I was showing them a project, and I needed to go into Moji to grab a URL because I have this bookmarking system, and it allowed, you know. So I open it up, and they were just kind of quickly, whoa, what is that? I was like, oh, nothing. That's just my project management system. And they kept talking about it. They kept bringing up, like, they wanted to use it and try it, and I kept, no. It's not ready. And it's just a small little tool. It's a toy. And long story short-ish, they ended up convincing me to turn it into a tool and to try and monetize it. So,
Are they your first customer? Are they currently using the tool?
They are not. No. That was one of the things was, they really liked the peripheral view of it. But then once we decided to kind of build it out and turn it into a thing, some very obvious problems started popping up. And, most of it had to do with the UI and the user interface. And none of that is my forte. I do the server side stuff. And I mean, like, my whole idea of it was like, well, it's basically a thing to interact with the database. And, you know, and there's not much to a project management system. There's not, you know, there's nothing really clever to most of them. It's just it's a CRUD tool.
Yeah.
So I built out a CRUD interface for it. And, it didn't go over well. So we ended up spending about a year back and forth trying different concepts and designs to re-envision the interface for it, and just never really got anywhere. But still, it was constantly in my head of like, wow, this thing is like, I mean, by this point, it's a very well done tool. It's all about collaboration, and it works on many teams, and it's very, very handy, I think, if I could solve the problem of the interface. And thankfully, Chris, I ended up showing it to Christopher, and he got it right away. He started to realize of like, you know, the system does exactly what you would expect a project management system to do. All it needs is a pretty face. So that's where we're at now. In fact, he's doing the interface, and I'm redoing it in a Xen Framework 2 because it's Xen Framework 1 is obviously pretty antiquated. So I'm redoing it in 2, and then hopefully we'll end up releasing it probably by summer.
Okay.
So that, we've gotten the work, and we're running pretty hardcore with that, but it's going to be amazing. I mean, just talking to the guy, like we have some pretty interesting ideas of how to integrate, in with Beanstalk and with Basecamp and to make it like a central hub and repository, especially for people like you and I, Patrick, where, we have our clients. So like me, I have a client over in LA who uses Basecamp, and I have a client over in New York who uses GitHub. And it sucks because I got to go into both, you know, three different systems. I would kind of want to turn MojiTrack into like a central repo. So I go into Moji and it has all that stuff all synchronized. And if I update Moji, it'll update client in LA and it'll update GitHub in New York and just kind of make things a lot more centralized and streamlined.
That's very cool. And that's I think that would be a huge selling point, especially to, you know, freelancers that, you know, we deal with so many different project management systems,
right?
Because that's what our clients are using, you know.
Yeah, and in fact, right now I've got Moji, Basecamp, Active Collab, GitHub, and I do consider GitHub to be project management. Okay, so just 4. So, but still,
yeah, that's like, a lot.
That's a lot, man. Yeah. And not to mention the different clients who have different accounts on those same tools. Because I have one client. Right. Well, I have 3 clients who use Basecamp. So 3 different, you know, usernames and passwords, and it's a pain in the butt. So that's the problem we're trying to solve.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Chris is in, I think, is it Bath?
Yeah.
In the UK?
Yeah. He's in Bath in England.
And the UK. And you're currently in Utah.
I am.
Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
So what's it like, I guess, just working with that huge time zone difference? Is that an issue, or?
You would think it would, but just through the nature of being a single programmer, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't have a girlfriend anymore, and I'm living in Utah. So my sleep habits, it's the craziest thing, but I started living by England time when he and I collaborate. Okay. But it is the weirdest thing where I'll wake up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and I'll just have my normal day, take care of my client stuff. And then around midnight, Chris will start doing his thing and I'm just now starting getting ready to go. So I'll just, I'll barrage him with a whole bunch of Skype things that he'll hit me back up with a couple hours later, but it works for some reason. I mean, he and I definitely have a very mutual symbiotic collaborative relationship. He fills in all these gaps that I don't, and vice versa. Like, he's an amazing front end guy who definitely has his head around server side.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly okay at server side stuff, but I'm not a very happy front end guy. I understand it, and I can write my jQuery and my JavaScript and, all that stuff if I have to, but that man gets it. Gets front end, and that's invaluable.
Yeah. I mean, the way he organized Site Manager and last year and just following that was amazing.
Yeah. The guy's an innovator for real.
Yeah. Very cool. So that's the, so are you anticipating Moji Tracker to alleviate some of the problems of, support will always be there, but at least you control the environment. You have some control over the user experience, the install. You can alleviate a lot of technical issues in a way that plugin development doesn't afford you.
Yeah, in fact, really with Moji Track,
Moji Track.
No worries. With Moji Track, we're gonna do it by two different vectors. One is obviously installed, because that's our forte. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'm extremely excited to be able to say to people, you have to use PHP 5.3 or 5.4, but being able to dictate that and wow, no, who said it could work on IIS? That's weird. Like, why are you running this on Tomcat? Nobody said, cannot wait to start busting that out. But the other is hosted. So we're definitely going to go with a hosted approach as well. So hopefully we'll be able to do best of both worlds, where if you're technically proficient, in fact, the other thing too is we're going to make it extensible in the same way that Expression Engine and WordPress are. So if Moji Track by itself will be a kick-ass, wonderful project management system. But if you want to add in extra functionality or change out how it works and how it looks, in fact, because that is in all the teams I've worked on, especially from the producers, they tend to hate every single project management system I've ever installed or set up for them. So the idea of being able to modify it specifically to how your team wants it to work and still be able to upgrade and live, I mean, just basically treating a project management system in much the same way development-wise as we do a content management system. But take that same paradigm and just kind of transfer it over, where we just get flexibility and control, and you can customize it and you can change things and not have to worry about security issues
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And there's a little bit of a tightrope there of making it flexible, for the advanced users, but also having a simple, I guess just sort of get off the ground running, system for basic, basic users.
Yeah. That's the big problem that the initial version of Moji Track runs is, works out wonderfully for me as a power user, but finding that sweet spot, that's kind of the pain of everything now. And in fact, one of the things I've probably grown at the most from Expression Engine add-on development is, interface design. Mm-hmm. It's just something I never really think through. I never really cared. I mean, like, my job is to make, when they click a link, there's some magic somebody wants to happen, and I make that happen. Yeah. But in terms of making sure that the buttons are within reach, or that it's set up in a nice hierarchical fashion, or none of that crosses my mind. Like, I tell my clients all the time, but if you leave your creative up to me, you're gonna get a white screen with Times New Roman. Like, I don't have any other expectations.
Yeah, Yeah. Set those expectations early.
Oh, yeah, seriously. Like, you know, I'll build you something, but if you don't explain it to me, you're going to get my interpretation.
Yeah.
But,
the perfect developer interface is a command line.
Exactly. Exactly.
Very cool. So that's a very exciting opportunity, and it sounds like everything has been, you know, in a progressive fashion leading up to this, you know, to this point where that's sort of the next phase is going to that next level and building a platform company, you know, not just, it's more than just software. You're almost trying to tackle and create an ecosystem,
right?
Especially with the plugins. So,
yeah, it definitely feels like things are kind of progressing to a logical end. You know, I mean, there's always been kind of an end game with development, mm-hmm. at least in terms of freedom, which is something I've spoken about a few different times and in other places. But I really like the freedom that we as developers can have over our lives nowadays. Yeah. We don't have to have a job. We're not dependent on anybody for our income. We do have options, you know, and to be able to kind of break outside that preconceived mold of like, let me go get a job and have my you know, retirement fund and trust this company to not, you know, embezzle said retirement fund. I mean, like all of these are things that really fairly new, but very, very exciting. And it feels like right now things are kind of coming to the point where I can start to grow out some of these concepts and ideas and maybe be able to live that programmer dream if it's at all possible. But yeah. It's very important to me to try.
Absolutely. Trying is, I get frustrated sometimes when I meet really talented developers and really talented people. And, I don't know, they're not creating anything outside of their 9-to-5 job, I guess, for whatever reason.
It always frustrates me when I meet developers who have 9-to-5 jobs. No, I mean, honestly, just in that, It doesn't seem like it's possible. I mean, just so much of what we do changes every day. We always have to stay on top of new technology and learn new skills and new concepts and ideas. And this idea of like, I can go and do programming from 9-to-5 and that's sufficient for me to live my life. I just don't see how that's possible.
Hmm. It's like, don't you get bored? You know, you're working on the same code base day in, day out.
Yeah. Well, that and, I don't know. I mean, it's got to get stagnant, right? I mean, like yeah. After a while, you're basically a COBOL programmer, right? Like, where are they?
Right. Yeah, I see what you mean. I one of the saddest things, I think I worked at a bank. Not going to say which one, but they're very large. and there was a developer, I guess there, or someone in IT. I don't know. He. They had a party for him for being there for like 30 years.
Ooh.
And I just mid-20s, I was like, what? No, I got to get out of here. I don't want to be that guy. So yeah, it's happened every 2 years, you know, before going as a freelancer, before doing my own thing, about the 2 year mark, I'd be like, okay, had enough of this job.
Yeah.
And beforehand, it was just like moving on to the next job because I was raised to get a job, have,
right,
you know, secure paycheck. And there was always something in the back of my head fighting against that and saying, no, there's a different way. So
now, it's definitely interesting. That's one of the things I've noticed about living in Utah is there's definitely a tech community out here. And it's surprising in that none of them are tech that we care about or use. It's things like Java and sysadmin. And I mean, just the as it was described to me, this cracked me up. I went out to a bar a couple weeks ago, and I ended up meeting this guy who worked at eBay out here. eBay has a big data warehouse out here. I mean, everybody does. The NSA does.
Yeah. But,
he described it to me the perfect way. He's like, dude, most of the people who work out here, we are the blue-collar IT folk, the blue-collar programmers, the ones who, like, they just got their job, and they go in, and they do their job, and then they go home. And I was just like, wow, like, it just had never occurred to me that would even exist, but... Yeah. Here they are. But a lot of people out in Utah specifically, like, I mean, I've just noticed that is a recurring theme. And I don't begrudge it at all. Like, these are some of the happiest and warmest people I've met.
Right.
But everybody seems to be about done. You know, they've had their ambition, they've had their goals, they've met them, and now they're done. And it kind of blows me away a little bit where, you know, like I kind of came upon this opportunity to go back to San Diego and California. And to me, like I was looking at that as like, this is great. Cause now I can kind of, you know, see what else I can do. And everybody, all of my friends love them, but I kept getting a lot of resistance from my friends on that of like,
really?
You know, why don't I just buy a house and settle down and get married? And it was just like, you know, here I am super excited. I'm like, dude, I'm going to go back to California. I'm going to, you know, I have the startup I'm going to be doing and, you know, this is great. Oh, you know, it wasn't the reception that I was expecting, but, it does seem to be the prevalent mentality. I do feel like we are kind of not the norm, you know, feeling like we can do this without a company or being able to not be beholden and keep our independence seems, contrary to a lot of people.
So where do you think that comes from? I mean, is it?
Oh, it's culture. No. I imagine most of it's culture. I remember that I went to school out in Tennessee, and I remember that feeling of, again, wonderful people, but they just aren't really raised with a level of ambition. Because remember, too, there's like we were talking about in the very beginning, very, very early on, like I knew that I had an out. I knew that I had a way out. So it was always kind of a reality to me. And I don't think that even the idea of it occurs to very many people.
Yeah.
So
there is a way out. They don't have to get married in high school and
get married, start a family, or I mean, it just becomes so many of these things that can kind of stop progress dead in its tracks, or really kind of put on pedestals and vaunted to people. Like, these are the goals worth achieving. And not that they're not. I mean, God forbid I give that impression. But for me, it's most definitely not. It was never a part of the plan. Like, I always wanted to go to school. I always wanted to grow and to become better. And it just, as I told a friend yesterday, it was, you know, I've been poor. I've tried it. Didn't really care for it. I'm definitely willing to, like, you know, let's check out that other thing. See how that goes.
But it's funny that, you know, in some way you're kind of, if it was just about not being poor, I mean, you could get a very comfortable job in a software company.
Definitely.
Earn six figures, maybe even a bonus. Because I imagine you're now.
That's my fallback.
Yeah, that's the fallback. That's plan B.
If this whole freedom thing doesn't really pay off, I guess I'll go sell out.
Yeah.
In fact, we never really touched on this, but that I ended up having a very profound experience with exactly that in my professional career, where I ended up taking a job for money, and not the collection agency one. This was real money, and was dreadfully unhappy. Just miserable. Again, with the huge long hours, but this was me, the one in charge, and I had to kind of force a lot of these ideals onto my team. And coming from that, I don't know. It weighed very heavily on my conscience, and it wasn't something that I was very happy doing. And I ended up coming to that realization of, like, you know, I mean, a lot of money is nice. It's definitely pretty sweet to be able to go out and buy something, but if you're not happy once you have the thing, I mean, like, what are you doing?
Right.
You know? And for me, it just kind of came to a point where, like, I don't need to be rich. But I don't want to be poor. So really, I just want to be comfortable. I want to be able to take care of myself and not rely on anybody or anything, and get to a point where it's like, I can just be happy with what I have and not continually trying to get more and more and more.
Yeah.
But, in fact, that's just why I have that tattoo on my arm.
Yeah, your tattoo. What does it say?
Sell out.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
It's just to remind me not to do that ever again, because that was miserable. I mean, a couple of years of just straight unhappiness. It was But I ended up getting some really nice stuff. So
yeah, that was the nest egg to.
After I left that job, that all of my savings went to supporting me while I built out the freelance career that I actually currently have. So I squandered all of it. All of my savings and all that stuff. Well, not squandered. That's the wrong word. But
invested.
It was something like I lived like 6 months pretty well. Not working. But during that time is when I built out Emoji Track and I learned Zen Framework and I got into Expression Engine and, you know, started building out my small little client base. I turned into more and more and more. And
What are some advice, I guess, to anyone listening to, especially if they're in that 9-to-5 job, and they have an inkling that they want to go out and work for themselves?
Ooh. Ask yourself if you're good enough. Because one of the big things or big advantages I found that a lot of us have, and I'm talking about collectively within our own community, like you and me, Patrick, and a lot of us, Justin, I mean, all of us, like Expression Engine developers, is that we know what we're doing. We've been doing this for years, and we are confident that we can build out anything or solve any problems or overcome any challenges that can come up. But if you don't have that confidence, you're going to crash and burn when you freelance. And I mean, like, you really do have to be able to tackle situations. And
not only that, but not only technical situations, but personal situations as well.
Oh, yeah.
Difficult clients, you know, someone trying to lowball you on your rate.
Mm. Understanding what it is that you're worth. I mean, in fact, that's a question that I've only recently, after 13 years of being, you know, a professional programmer, I've just recently over the last year come to realize what my value is, like feeling good about my dollar amount that I bill for. And that is such a hugely loaded question. And it's so complicated. I remember struggling within myself many times. Yeah. I remember starting out at $30 an hour once and thinking, oh my God, nobody's going to pay that, you know?
But at the same time, you have this confidence too of like, oh no, I can build this.
Mm-hmm.
But that confidence sometimes doesn't transition over to people will pay me for knowing how to do this, and they'll pay me very, very well for that.
Oh, in fact, that's another really, really good skill. I never realized I needed it until this last time freelancing. And thankfully, at that job that I just mentioned that I was very unhappy at, one of my responsibilities, because I was the director of technology, so I would have to interface with clients and kind of learn how to talk technical stuff to non-technical people to essentially dumb it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that as a freelancer, holy crap, is that valuable.
Yeah.
And just being able to explain to the client in a way that they'll understand why something is going to take as long as it is. Sure. I mean, so many people have horror stories of looking down there, and they end up looking at us like we're lying. So having that confidence, you know, that's hugely valuable. Oh my God.
Well, yeah. And moving the conversation away from how much it costs to basically the value that you know, they're paying for, you know, the benefits of, well, you came to us because you wanted to reduce the cost it takes you to do X as part of your business.
Yeah, and
whatever we charge is going to pay for itself after X number of months or so. So, you know,
I also try and keep in mind too with my rate, I'll hear from people that like, oh wow, you're like three times more expensive than this other guy. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I'm also three times faster, and it's also going to be three times better. Like,
yeah,
you got to be able to learn to talk to him and explain it to him, and that's just tough. I mean, interfacing with clients, especially for us techie folks. You know, like we're used to sitting in the dark with, you know, fluorescent lights overhead.
And I think it's we're not very well trained, I guess, to think about the value our code brings to customers, you know. And part of this, I think any good developer, they have this natural desire to be helpful, I think, a lot of times. B, they don't view this as, we typically don't view this as, you know,
work.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, no, work is, oh, people get paid for work. I'm getting paid to screw around and do something I really love. And so any amount that enables me to do that is great.
Yeah, it definitely, I remember fighting with myself about that too, is how can I charge for this thing that I would essentially do for free?
Yeah.
I mean, like, when it comes down to it, I love this work so much. I would not for somebody else, but I would definitely kind of do whatever project they were thinking about in my spare time just to figure out how to do it if I didn't know it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you bill for that?
Right.
But tough question. I was never able to figure that out. I mean, even later on in my career, it was when I knew the reality of negotiation.
Yeah.
Remember, like, that was a tough lesson of it's, you're not paid what you're worth. You're paid what you can negotiate.
Right.
Oh man. Yeah. That was a clouds parting moment of like, it doesn't matter how good or technically skilled I am. What really matters is how well I can bullshit. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, at that phase, you'll pay me how much I can lie. Like, oh, this is great. I can totally spin a tail. Absolutely. Yeah. Sit down. Let's talk.
Yeah, I found my wife is a realtor, and she's, you know, we met around the same time I went as a freelancer, and she kind of inspired me because she was essentially has been working for herself for 8 years.
Right.
Now,
right.
So, and
lovely
whenever,
woman, by the way.
Whenever I have a moment of like, oh, should I charge X or X for that? Or, you know, oh, I'm charging too high. I talk to her and mm-hmm. she convinces me that it's the right amount, if not higher.
Right. In fact, that's how a lot of my internal monologues go when it comes to the billing is worst case, they'll say no, but I charge so much I can afford it. Like, I mean, really, it's one of those things of like that old joke of selling a picture for like $10,000 and like, I only need one. Like, that's pretty much the situation I'm in. Like, if somebody can't afford it, that's fine. There'll be another job coming along tomorrow and they'll, you know, I'll more than make up for it. I'm not trying to get rich here. I'm just, you know, trying to pay a bill.
Yeah.
But
and it enables you, it gives you so much more time to work on Emoji Track and, you know, other endeavors that are bringing in money when you are sleeping, you know, like when.
Oh, isn't that the greatest feeling though, Pat?
Oh, it's
waking
so
up and seeing the email. You're like, oh, I didn't do
so
anything.
Great. Even just $15 sleeping. I'm like,
oh,
yay,
yeah.
My Wendy's is paid for.
Exactly. I'll take $15. Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, it just gets you off this train of like, and that's what I'm focused on now is building an audience, building, you know, people who come to me just more for, aside from development, who come to me for stuff that I'm interested in and, you know, other things that I can provide of value. So like this podcast for one, just get, you know, having an opportunity to gain knowledge and gain experience from people like yourselves and like yourself. And also just get off this train of like getting paid hourly, you know, you put in X amount of effort, you get paid X amount. I mean, to me that, you know, it works. It enables me to have a certain amount of freedom, but I think there's another way in terms of, you know, start to scale that stuff out. And I think products is a good way to do it.
Definitely. If I wasn't in it's really such a, now I'm getting kind of nostalgic, but I mean, it's such a wonderful time to be involved, right, you know, professionally right now.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's really like why more people should do this. I mean, honestly, it's the freedom that we get, the freedom that we can attain. And it's not easy. I mean, this is something I've been working at for years and years and years and years and years, but the payoff, it feels like it's almost coming up and there might be a point where, you just get this big monkey of survival off of your back. You know, like everything I do, I always feel like I've got to cover my bills and cover this issue or cover this thing. And if I can just kind of make as many of those non-issues, and I just want to spend my days smiling, you know, I mean, like worst case, is that such a horrible dream? I just want to smile and laugh and be happy. And I don't know. It feels like there might be a point if we work hard enough and, you know, we put in the effort where it could happen.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm all about that. I just want to be happy, man. It's all about being happy.
Absolutely. It's all about being happy. And I think this is a great place to leave it.
And, I thought you might.
Well, that wraps up the latest episode of Flyover Startups. You can find out more about Mythra 62's add-ons for Expression Engine at mythra62.com. That's mythra62.com. And you can follow Eric on Twitter at mythra62. If you or someone you know is running a startup business outside of Silicon Valley, let us know. You can contact us at contact@flyover.fm or follow us on Twitter at flyoverfm, all one word. I'm your host, Patrick Poehler. Thanks for listening.